You're tuned to the Book Club on Perspectives, and join us today is Robert Seltzer. Robert is a UTEP graduate. He is also a former writer for the El Paso Times and the El Paso Herald Post. He lives in San Antonio now, and he's here to talk about the book just came out, Amado Muro and Me, A Tale of Honesty and Deception. And we're going to tell you a little bit more about this book and his dad and growing up and everything that he's experienced. But first of all, Robert, thank you so much for joining us and welcome home.
Thank you very much. It's a huge honor to be back here.
Now, tell us a little bit about, first of all, before we get started about your book and your dad and everything that he did, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
I'm the public editor at the Express News in San Antonio, and I don't do much writing anymore. I write an occasional column, but my job is to be a liaison between the readers and the top executives at the Express News. If they have a problem, they come to me.
Now, as I mentioned, the book is Amado Muro and Me, and if people are not familiar with Amado Muro, well, they may be familiar with Chester Seltzer, and Chester Seltzer and Amado Muro are one and the same. And it's kind of confusing, but it's interesting, too, the story that comes around this, because your dad, Chester Seltzer, was born in Cleveland, Ohio. He was born money and privilege, and yet he decided that that's not the identity he wanted. He wanted something else. So if you wouldn't mind, first of all, sharing about your dad and him before he married your mom, coming to El Paso and then traveling around the world, and what he fell in love with Mexico.
He did. You know, as you say, he was a child of privilege. His father was the editor of the Cleveland Press, and he was known as the most powerful journalist in Ohio. And had my father chosen to take that path, he would have had a very easy road ahead of him, because his father wanted to help him and, in fact, wanted to hire him. But my father didn't want that. He was a child of the Depression, and while he didn't suffer along with the people on the streets, he empathized with him, and he wanted no part of the easy life that lay before him.
This must have been very confusing for your grandparents.
It was very confusing, because he was basically an outsider in his own family. You know, my grandfather was a wonderful man, but he was conservative. And somehow, some way, he raised a liberal who saw the suffering on the streets that he walked every day. And he wanted to help them. But more than that, he wanted to tell their story. And that's what he did when he chose literature over journalism.
And as far as wanting to tell the story and the literature that he wrote, he wanted to tell the story the way it actually was. He didn't want to make up characters. He didn't want to make up identities. He traveled the boxcars. He slept in hobo camps. He did everything to identify with these people.
That's right. He was short story writer, but deep inside he was a journalist. And when he wrote his stories, he wanted them to be authentic. So he traveled the same roads that his characters traveled. He rode on freight trains. He stayed in flop houses. He ate in hobo jungles. And he became, in essence, one of them. And while his short stories were literature, to me, knowing what he went through, they almost seemed like nonfiction.
As far as the writing, he, you know, of course, you know, as you mentioned, your grandfather was a journalist, and he inherited, I would think, some of that writing from him. And then, as I told you before we started the interview, that you inherited some of that writing from your dad, and you said, oh, you're too kind, but your writing is very good as well. And I like what you wrote at the beginning of the book about your dad and the fact that you're almost jealous of what he can write, the beautiful sentences, the paragraphs, the words. And you know, when you read this book and some of the samples, because I think there are a couple stories.
There's two stories there
from your dad. And you're there. You're there when you write those stories.
Right. I was literally there, because he used to write on the sofa in the living room, and he would write his stories longhand. And after he finished them, he would type them up on a typewriter that he kept on the dining room table. And as I say in the book, most families, most, quote, normal families, had flowers as centerpieces of their tables, but we had a typewriter. And it was always in the middle of the table. And then he would slide it to the edge whenever he was ready to transcribe his stories. And when he finished, he would slide it back to the middle of the table. And there was our centerpiece again. But I saw him as he created the stories. He would write them on yellow legal pads. And he was tortured when he wrote. I mean, it was a painstaking process for him. And by the time he would finish a story, there would be crumpled wads of yellow paper on the floor in front of him, sometimes stacked as high as the coffee table. But he was very meticulous. He was precise. He was a perfectionist. And I remember one time he was working on a short story, and it took him a month to write a single sentence.
Did you ever... as a little boy, and I would imagine, you know, like most little boys, you were curious. Did you ever go and grab one of those yellow balls and unravel it and try and read it?
I did, but his handwriting was so illegible that it was all but impossible. I think only he could decipher his own writing. And it wasn't until one day that he promised to show me one of his stories, after he had typed them, of course. And I read it. The story was called Blue. And I was just 10 years old, but I read it. I knew little about literature, but even at that age, I could sense what was good. And I was just in awe. I was entranced, captivated by the words on the typewritten sheet of paper. And for the first time, I realized what my father did, and I realized how significant and indeed beautiful it was.
And that was a story about the hobo and the dog?
It was a story about the hobo and the dog. The hobo would travel the country with his dog that he named Blue. The dog was Blue. And my father never explained it, but I imagine it was from all the oil and grease that would land on his fur and turned it from whatever the original color was to blue. And At the end of the story, my father offers the hobo some money so he could feed himself. And the hobo says, "No, that's fine. I appreciate it. But I would be grateful if you gave some food to Blue."
What a touching story.
It's beautiful.
You mentioned about him having the typewriter as a centerpiece. And one of the things that stands out in the book also, which I thought was... pretty funny. I'm sure the people in the newsroom didn't think it was funny when he started typing and he left the paper in the carriage and then took off.
Right. You know, he was filled with wanderlust. And while he was a journalist, it wasn't really his love. He only did it to feed himself and his family. His first love was literature and his short stories. And one day he answered the siren's call in his mind and he said, "I want to be a merchant marine." So he was typing the story, and he just left it there in the cylinder and went off. And the next thing you knew, he was on his way to Greece with the merchant marines.
And then he got in trouble with the captain, correct?
He got in trouble with the captain. They were anchored offshore of Athens, I believe. And the captain had invited some dignitaries, and they were in his room. And my father had been assigned to the washing detail. And he went into the captain's office, and he was mopping the floor. And he accidentally spilled some soapy water on one of the dignitaries. Well, the dignitary was kind. He took no offense. But the captain did. And as punishment, he assigned my father latrine duty all the way from Greece back to America, which I don't know how many weeks or months that took. And my father was incensed. So he wrote this poem that was not very kind or generous toward the captain. And he made the mistake of showing it to one of his shipmates. Well, that shipmate posted it on the bulletin board. And of course, the captain, even though the poem was not signed, the captain knew who had written it.
And he got into even more trouble. When he came back to El Paso and he was working, he met your mom at the Paso del Norte Hotel, I believe?
That's right.
Because your mom was working there,
right?
For American Airlines?
For American Airlines, yeah. She was a PR person. In fact, In many ways, they were opposites because my father was shy, introverted, socially awkward, and my mother was very charming and outgoing. But somehow they hit it off. They met in that circular bar, that beautiful bar where Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid used to hang out. He was teaching at Sacred Heart at the time. So he probably walked over from the school, you know, maybe after every afternoon to have a beer after a day of work with all those young, rambunctious kids. And that's where he met my mother. They fell in love and got married. And it did not take long after that that he adopted her maiden name, Amado Muro, as his pen name.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, people who read this book might be curious about the fact that why did your father choose the name Amado Muro? And some people even criticized him for not only taking the name Amado Muro, but taking an Hispanic name as opposed to, you know, Anglo-American name like he had.
Right. Particularly when he himself was Anglo and did not know much about the Mexican culture until his late adolescence. He had read The Treasure de Sierra Madre, B. Traven. He fell in love with Mexico as a result before he even saw it or knew it. So he graduated from high school and he traveled to Mexico. He traveled to Mexico by a very curious route, by hitchhiking and by hopping freight trains. But he ended up all the way south to Chihuahua. And he didn't realize it at the time, of course, but this was the land where his future wife had come from. But he fell in love with it, settled in El Paso, and the love he had for Mexico and its people just grew and grew. And so by the time he married my mother and adopted her maiden name as his pseudonym, his passion was so great that when he wrote the stories under Amado Muro, no one could tell that he wasn't Mexican because the stories were so passionate and authentic.
When did you decide, Robert, to write this book?
I think it was in the early 80s, and I wanted to tell the story of a man who saw bridges where others saw barriers. And I thought he was the perfect vehicle for that because he was an Anglo from Ohio that, in essence, became a Mexican. And instead of just writing a story that said that, I wanted to dramatize it through an incident in my own life. We moved from El Paso to Bakersfield when I was 10 years old. And despite my last name, I'm Latino, of course. And I was the only Latino in the little Catholic school that I went to in Bakersfield. So I was looking at my class picture from 1964, and I was the only brown face in a sea of white faces. And I thought, you know, this is the perfect vehicle to dramatize the story of my father, because that was to this day, it's probably one of the worst years in my life, because I was bullied for being Latino. And I had one particular nemesis who haunted me throughout the school year, you know, sometimes violently, sometimes verbally, but always brutally. And that year remained close to my heart. And I guess part of me wanted to exorcise it from my system. So I think I did that by writing the book. And part of my motivation, indeed, perhaps most of my motivation, was to turn this into an ode to my father. But I wanted to be honest in my portrait of him. I didn't want to present him as a saint. So I think I did that. I think I captured a human being, not a saint, because he had flaws. And I think I'm honest about those flaws. But by being honest, I think that you create a sharper, more fully realized portrait. And I hope I did that. I hope I did that because, you know, he was admirable, flaws and all. And I think that I have never met a man with more nobility or integrity than my father. And not a day goes by that I don't think about him. So that's when I started writing in the book in the early 1980s. But I wrote about three chapters, and I was paralyzed by this notion that I could never be as good as he was. And so I just abandoned the project because I didn't think I was up to it. I came back to it years, probably decades later, when I had acquired enough confidence in my writing ability. And I still don't think that I measure up to his prose, and I probably never will. But I had shed whatever anxiety I had felt about reaching that level. And I said, well, I'm not my dad, but I'm going to write about him. And I'm going to write about him as honestly and gracefully as I can. So I picked up the project years, decades. Words my grandfather read captivated me, entranced me. And for the first time, I said to myself, I'm going to be what my dad was. I'm going to be a writer.
And was your grandpa familiar with your dad's writings, or was this the first time he had read them as well?
No, he had read them, and he was very proud of him. And he always said, my dad was more talented than he was as a writer.
As far as the, what is the word I want to choose here? Well, first of all, getting back to your father's stories, you include two of his stories in this book. I would imagine that it was difficult to choose which stories to put in here because, I mean, they were all so good. I haven't read any of your dad's stories until I got to this book, but I would imagine that it was difficult to choose those two particular ones.
It was, and the publishers of the book, TCU Press, left it up to me as to which stories they were going to publish. And my first choice was Cecilia Rosas, which I believe is his masterpiece. But that story has been anthologized dozens of times. So they rejected that, which broke my heart. So I picked two other stories, one about Mexican villagers and one about hobos.
You got to go with your dad to a hobo camp. And as you mentioned earlier about the fact that, you know, you kind of resented the fact that he was always gone. And like most little kids, I think, you know, they want to go with their dads and do something, whether, you know, they want to go deer hunting, whatever the rite of passage to them is. And to you, going to a hobo camp with your dad was something that was awesome, but at the same time, very frightening or different.
That's right. I always fantasized about going on the freight train journeys with my dad, and I would fantasize about him constantly to the point where my fantasies became real, and I could feel the trains rumbling over the tracks. I could see the horizon outside the boxcars. I could hear the men talking as they were huddled against the cold in those boxcars. But of course, it never happened. I always hoped that it would, but there was no way that my father was going to take a 10-year-old boy on a trip with him. So one day he took me to the hobo jungle, and we were carrying bags of groceries for the men in the camp. And that was my first experience at a hobo jungle. And I was a little intimidated by it because the men were so gruff. They used language that I hadn't really heard before. And it was shocking. And my father could tell that I was a little put off by what was happening. So he put his arm around me. And then the leader of the camp was Latino, but everyone called him Big Bill. He was this massive man. He was like a mountain with legs. But he was very sophisticated, even though it was hard to see past his dirty face and his raggedy clothes. There was actually some elegance to the man, and he was very sweet to me. You know, he said, you look like a fine young man, and he chastised the other members of the camp for being so crude and rough in front of me. So I appreciated it, even though it was a little embarrassing to be singled out that way.
You know, I'm not sure if you probably don't notice it, Robert, but you can tell you're a writer and a man of words, even by your speaking. When you were talking about what you imagined seeing if you were to go on one of these trips with your dad, the way you described those things were, I mean, only a writer or a journalist could speak like that. So you have some It's a compliment as far as, you know, you have a great way with your words, like your dad, and you inherited, you know, some of that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
As far as the book itself, what is the next step? I know that on your visit here to El Paso, you're going to go visit a school. You're going to talk to them, the students, and talk to them about your experience. Because in this day and age, when we're experiencing so much hate, racism, everything else, you experienced that, as you mentioned earlier, when you were in Bakersfield. And in fact, you came home one time and you told your mom that you had been called a beaner. And I love your mom's response, what she told you. she said to call him?
She told me to call him a hot dog or a hamburger, since those were, quote, American foods, just as beans were a Mexican food.
And your dad's love for Mexico, if people haven't picked up this book yet, Amado Muro and Me, the pictures you put in here are fabulous, especially the ones of your grandmother. And then, you know, I think there's one of your grandpa as well, when he's at the press in the newsroom. Right. And then you talk a lot about the Mexican Revolution and the fact that El Paso, basically, as David Rommel wrote, ringside seat to a revolution. People right. would watch.
Right. My mother was a little girl when they came over. She was born in Chihuahua, but they fled the chaos and mayhem of the country they loved. And they found a home in South El Paso in a tenement building. And they could see the violence and the bloodshed in Mexico from the rooftop of their tenement building.
And you write also about some of the buildings having bullet holes and other things, and right there by the where the Colon Theater used to be.
Right.
And that is where they lived?
That's where they lived. They lived near Sacred Heart, as I say, between the church and the Colon Theater.
When you were talking earlier about your dad using the different words, in one of the pages here towards the end of the book where you talk about nostalgia. And you said nostalgia, and you said, you know what that means, right? And you said that you did. And then he said, nostalgia was a precarious proposition. And he said, ay Dios mío. I waited for him to ask me if I knew what a precarious proposition was. So I kept talking.
Yeah, he was always using big words and asking me what they meant. And of course, 99% of the time, I didn't know what they meant. And I would ask him, well, what does that word mean? And he would point to a book on a bookshelf in the living room. And of course, that book was a dictionary. And I would have to look it up. And it was a very frustrating experience. I remember one time I told him, Dad, how can I look up this word if I don't even know how to spell it? And he said, oh, okay. And he would spell it for me.
Tell us a little bit about this book. Where can people get it? Do you have a website? Can they find some of the other stories your dad has written? Or what? How do they find out more information about you,
Robert? They could go online and order it through TCU Press or through Amazon. Or they could. I know it's available at the Barnes & Nobles in San Antonio. I don't know if they're available here, but I'm sure they could order it. But the easiest method to do it would be to order it through TCU Press or through Amazon.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with Robert Seltzer. Robert is the author of the book, Amado Muro and Me, A Tale of Honesty and Deception. In this book, Robert tells a little bit about his dad. His dad was a writer. His name was Chester Seltzer. He adopted the name Amado Muro. And as we talked at the beginning of the interview, Chester Seltzer was born into money and privilege. His dad was a powerful man in journalism in Ohio. And then Chester decided to go his own way. He adopted Mexico and the Mexican heritage as his own. And he started writing under Amado Muro. And Muro was your mom's maiden name?
Muro was my mom's maiden name.
And then your mom's name was Amada.
Amada Muro, yeah. And you know, I know I'm biased, but I think I really do believe this. The two most wonderful pseudonyms in literature are Mark Twain and Amado Muro.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was an honor.
Again, Robert Seltzer. The name of the book is Amado Muro and Me, A Tale of Honesty and Deception. And you can find the book at their Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or TCU Press, which is where the book was published. And Robert now lives in San Antonio, and he works for the San Antonio Express. Again, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
The Book Club on Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Book Club on Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.